Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Legalized marijuana is always a very difficult question.
The time is long overdue for us to remove the federal prohibition on marijuana.
Now on, I smoke weed exclusively with white people.
Well, I'm getting high next time.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man, the Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
There's definitely cannabis in there, and it makes sure that I can sleep now.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Don't piss off your old dealer.
Marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized.
I know you're not supposed to admit that you smoke pot, but I don't drink alcohol.
Let's get out of here. I have some really good weed back at the hotel.
I used to smoke marijuana.
I don't care if an adult wants to smoke marijuana. They shouldn't go to prison for it either.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, and it is Friday, so welcome to the weekend. So glad to have you all here. And it's a special day for me for a couple reasons. The first I'll tell you about is that it's the birthday today of Madeline Martinez from the world-famous Cannabis Cafe. But it's also another special birthday. Yes. That is my dad, the Rockin' Johnny B, singing his childhood favorite, Elvis Presley. I think I'm singing background on this one, too. Of course, Dad is mostly a country musician.
Me and old Friendly Henry ever did together back in 1969, wasn't it?
No, 68.
Oh, my God, it was worse than I
thought. Wow.
It's so when we first got together. And first
you're hearing my dad,
his
longtime guitar player, Friendly Henry.
And this was a song that I climbed up on the bandstand and just chucked it right out to the audience, just right there. I looked good, too.
I don't think I was a twinkle at that time.
And that's my brother Matt on the drums there you just heard. This is a song my dad's been doing with Friendly Henry for as long as I've been alive. 1968. Only daddy that'll walk the line. My dad, the Rockin' Johnny B, he's since hung up his bass. He's retired from playing music for the past, maybe 2 years, 3 years. He's turned 75 today, which he'll tell you is about 25 years longer than he expected. My dad comes from the old Outlaws period of country music, the late 60s, early 70s. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, Johnny Cash, Carl Perkins, the bad boys of country music, they were kind of known as back then. And kind of lived that outlaw lifestyle. I grew up on the road. My dad's bass drum case was a playpen at the time. And we traveled all across the Western United States as a kid. So to this day, I can hold my bladder on a road trip longer than just about anybody because I had all that experience as a kid. And we're talking old school road tripping as a kid. Now, we don't got no safety seats. We didn't have no iPads. We didn't have none of that crap. We had an eight-track deck, if you were lucky, to play music on. And me and my brother, I remember distinctly sleeping in the back window of the Lincoln. Like a big old Lincoln, and I'm back there in that back window. Or sometimes they put pillows on the floorboards. You had that axle that ran down the middle. You could just rest a pillow up on that. Me and my little brother would sleep back there. So, yeah, happy birthday to my dad, 75, who's got to tell you a lot of the reason why I'm doing this right here, right now. I get my voice from him. I get my musical background, my performance background. All comes from my dad's side of the family. And also the drug side. Being one of those country outlaws back in the day, they smoked the weed, they drank a lot, they did this and that and the other thing. Turned out my dad ended up with a pretty nasty case of alcoholism and drug addiction throughout all of that, and got into recovery and got clean and sober in 1980, and has been clean and sober ever since. Hasn't had a drink, hasn't had a drug since then. Well, hasn't had a non-prescribed medication since then. He's on all sorts of opiates right now, but that's a whole nother story. But yeah, he was a party hardy outlaw country musician, and then by the time I turn age 12, he goes back to college, gets his degree, becomes a drug and alcohol counselor, and I think a lot of that has a an effect as to why I'm here, of course, right? I've seen both sides of this. This is why I'm devastating in a debate with prohibitionists. A lot of times those prohibitionists are guys like Ben Cort and these other guys that used to be drug users, used to be marijuana users, and then it went bad for them, and then they've, you know, got converted and have kind of gotten zealous on the other end of it. Because I understand that. I've seen that side of it. I've been to the worst place you can be as a little kid with your dad trying to kick drugs cold turkey in a trailer. You're having to listen to him scream for 2 weeks on end. It'll kind of put you into mind as to what drug addiction can be. So they can't sway me, fool me, or pull on my heartstrings with their pity stories about their drug addiction, because I've lived worse. I've seen worse. And I know the truth about this stuff, and I know that it wasn't marijuana that did any of those things to anybody. And they do too. Well, I started on marijuana and then I moved on to such and such. Okay, so you moved on to such and such. There's your problem. You moved on. You didn't stick with the safest alternative. That's your problem. And so it becomes something where I guess there would be some sort of Freudian aspect to this, you know, trying to make my way in the world, being the champion of drug use. But we have a lot of discussions about this. We have a lot of great talks about it. And Dad's always had, you know, an intelligent point of view, a reasonable point of view when it comes to marijuana. His point of view is like the point of view in the 1996 movie Half-Baked, the Dave Chappelle movie. Marijuana? You came to a rehab from marijuana? It's just silly, right, in his mind. We discussed Joe Schrank's interview the other day about the cannabis-assisted sobriety. What a fantastic idea. He's like, that's a great idea. You know, oh, you're trading one addiction for another. Yeah, for one that won't kill you. Not a bad trade, huh? Happy birthday, Dad. I love you. Can't believe you're 75 years old. That means, God damn, I'm almost 50. Oh, man. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, looking back at journalism in San Luis Obispo, interesting perspective here from the Tribune there in SLO. And looking back at some of their early journalism about marijuana and just how racist it was. Be right back with that after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Son, I figured when you were old enough, I'd talk to you about drugs. I'd tell you they're nothing but poison. Tell you to stay away from the garbage that pushes that junk. Only I never figured that I ought to be telling that to a 13-year-old.
If you don't teach your kids to say no to drugs, it's as good as saying yes.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day, exclusively on RadicalRuss.com.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-4445. 800-327-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedup.lawyer@gmail.com.
You're listening to The Russ Belville Show.
As a freshman member of the Oregon legislature, I was able to vote as my state was the first to decriminalize.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere.
This is Radical Russ Belville with a word about stone driving. Numerous studies have shown once you factor in age and gender, drivers with cannabis in their system have no statistically greater risk of motor vehicle crashes than sober drivers. But that doesn't mean you ought to be toking and driving. Those studies are referring to people with any amount of THC or metabolite in their system, not people who've just smoked marijuana. Simulators and observed demonstrations show that cannabis consumers do develop a tolerance to the impairing effects of marijuana and can perform driving tasks within an acceptable margin of safety. However, infrequent and novice consumers do not and cannot and would be wise to never toke and drive. Even regular cannabis consumers should exercise caution before deciding to drive, as most state laws punish drivers harshly if they're discovered to have marijuana in their system. This has been a public service announcement from The Russ Belville Show.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Farrakh has sent him a package. Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. You're tuned into The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 12 after the hour, and I ran across this interesting post on the San Luis Obispo Tribune, San Luis Obispo, California. The headline is SLO Counties, San Luis Obispo Counties, early stories of marijuana were filled with fear and racism. And I have some photos that accompany this as well that are just entertaining as hell to look at. They've got one. This is from a 1987 raid where they've got a guy burning some awful-looking marijuana. But they have also a reproduction of a story and one of the pages from their newspaper from 1938. Kind of interesting to look at. And in the story by David Middlecamp, he points out, he gives a basic retelling of marijuana's prohibition history and so forth, but gets more into discussing the journalism in San Luis Obispo County that decried the use of marijuana, that tried to demonize it here. And he says, "The earliest marijuana mention that I can find in the Tribune's digital archive is a multi-part series of stories by Scripps League staff writer Bill Golden, published in the San Luis Obispo Daily Telegram in March and April of 1938. The stories were consistent with the evil weed narrative linking violent crime, marijuana, and communities of color. On the same page as a cartoon showing Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler eyeing Austria, were these March 17th, 1938 headlines. Assassins derive flimsy courage by use of marijuana. And modern mobsters run amok after using drug plant." He goes on to write that the story connects marijuana use to Persian terrorists, Pancho Villa's plunderers, New York bohemians, and jittery jazz musicians dreaming of mayhem. The March 24th, 1938 headline, "Drug-inspired criminal acts incredibly brutal," ran over a collection of anecdotes linked to marijuana. "It took a wild-eyed youth gripping a dripping axe, the weapon he used to murder his parents, two brothers, and a sister, to jerk America into full consciousness that she faced something new in crime." End quote. Yeah, axe murdering marijuana users in San Luis Obispo County in the late 1930s. Names for the drug included muggles, hay, and reefer. That's something for the younger folks that are all fans of Harry Potter. Yes, muggles was a name for marijuana back in the 1930s. The youth's explanation in sobs, "I don't know why I was high on reefers," is one of the lines from a 1930s report. The pursuit of violent thrills leading to bad ends were sketched in several unnamed and unattributed anecdotes. Quote, "case-hardened detectives, incredulous, mutter, 'Gosh, it gets you,'" end quote. Then, of course, he starts getting into some of the racism that was involved in this journalism back in the late 30s, early 40s. A March 29th, 1938 article reads, quote, "Color lines are thinly drawn in the Southland, sometimes with the result that Negroes and Mexicans find much in common. The Mexican, who works in the sugar beet patch, finds it simple to cultivate a small plot of marijuana nearby," end quote. And of course, jazz musicians, especially, you know, black jazz musicians, were associated with marijuana use in the day. Cab Calloway being one of the leading ones, as well as Louis Armstrong. Cab Calloway in 1932 had recorded the hit tune "The Reefer Man." That funny reefer man. Bill Golden, the aforementioned writer for San Luis Obispo County, wrote, quote, "In turn, many a colored musician, already outstanding by virtue of the innate rhythm of his race, finds he can execute passages otherwise impossible after smoking," end quote. Wow. Wow. So first of all, black folks have the innate rhythm. They have natural rhythm, black folks, according to this guy. And that gets supercharged through their use of the reefers. Oh, wow. He concludes the series on April 4th, 1938, writing, quote, "To those who wonder if it would make any difference if you were to try marijuana just once, don't. The end." So this is typical of what you find in the journalism of that era. Not even thinly veiled racism, no veil whatsoever. Open, overt racism in demonizing and describing the plant and its uses, and including it in the descriptions of the most egregious amounts of violence that you could possibly imagine. Axe murderers killing their families is the kind of stuff that we get from these early efforts. And it just goes to show how powerful the media can be in shaping our perceptions in this country. I mean, you got to give them some credit here. We're talking about a plant that had been harvested on this continent since 1611. We've been using hemp in North America since the colonies, since 1611. It was a major part of our trade. It was a part of the reason we were colonized in the first place, was to provide this hemp that was necessary for the British Empire in part of the triangle trade that involved, you know, kidnapping and enslaving Africans and sugar and rum and hemp. All part of this. We had our colonies paying their taxes to Britain in cultivated hemp. We had hemp used all throughout this country all the way up until 1937, and then used during World War II when we ran out of our supply of hemp from the Philippines. We've had the drug use of marijuana at least as far back as 1850, with Dr. O'Shaughnessy reviving the understanding of cannabis as a medicine in this country at that time. And likely before then, people were using preparations of cannabis as medicine. And the use of marijuana as just a social fun way to get high has been in this country since the early 1900s. So for our opponents to have been able to demonize marijuana so successfully through racism and allusions to violence and madness is really a triumph of propaganda that is probably exceeded only by Nazi Germany. That's how effective the big lie has been in Reefer Madness, a plant that we had been using and loving and benefiting from for centuries, prohibited in the span of just a generation.
Well, laddie frickin' da!
That always kind of puts a fine point on it, doesn't it? Happy 420, everyone. From the Pacific time zone, that is. So glad you can be here with us. It's time for our union mandated safety briefing. We got to take a break and see how safe this is. And when we return, we'll talk about the catch-22 of medical marijuana and organ transplants.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I do support the use of medical marijuana, and I think even there, we need to do a lot more research.
Okay, well, maybe you're high, too. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Dude.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 22 after the hour. Hope you're feeling safe out there. So we're taking a look at some of the craziness out there in the world of marijuana. And there's a story out in CNN on the catch-22 of medical marijuana and organ transplants. Now, this is something I am fully aware of. One of the very first stories that I reported on when I got involved in this side of the microphone, talking and podcasting about marijuana issues, was the 2008 case of Tim Guerin. And Tim Guerin was a musician in Washington State who suffered from liver failure. And I could really identify with the guy because as a professional musician, you don't exactly have Cadillac gold-plated health care. You're lucky if you have any health care, and he did not, like many, you know, starving musicians do. So he had liver failure and was on the transplant list to get a liver. And while he was on that transplant list, of course, he's in a lot of pain. So he confides in his doctor that he's in this pain. And the doctor, of course, is reticent to have this guy take a bunch of acetaminophen, you know, Tylenols or anything like that, because that stuff's bad for your liver. It might help the pain, but it's going to poison your liver. And this guy needs all, you know, all the spare liver he can afford, right? He can't, you know, be wasting and hurting his liver when he needs a transplant. So Tylenol, acetaminophen, NSAIDs, these are all hepatotoxic. They're bad for your liver. So he needs some sort, and especially, oh God, forget about the opioids, forget about the Vicodins and the Percocets and the Oxycontins when you got a bad liver. So being in Washington State and being somewhat informed about this, and Tim Guerin being a guy who's a, you know, pro musician, he'd known people that had smoked pot in the past, they decide that the best idea for dealing with the terrible pain while he's waiting for his liver transplant is to use medical marijuana. Marijuana is not toxic to the liver at all. And it's pretty good at relieving all sorts of pain, especially neuropathic nerve type of pain. So he got him a medical marijuana card, got him some medical marijuana. Well, that's where the problem kicked in, because as soon as the place he was on the transplant list found out that he was on medical marijuana, they said, oh, well, you're using an illegal drug. We don't give livers to drug abusers. You're a drug abuser. You're abusing marijuana. We don't give livers to people like that. That we've got to save the livers for the people who aren't just going to waste them and fritter their life away as drug users. They denied Tim Guerin his spot. You know, he was next to get a liver. He was the next guy. He was up. They had a liver. Oh, sorry, we can't give it to you. You turned positive for THC. So, God, what do you have to do? What does he have to do? What does he have to do to be able to get that liver? Well, the place he was on the list said, well, we'll put you back on the list if you can pass piss tests and show us that you're not using marijuana for 6 months. 6 months? This guy's on. He's dying, waiting for a liver that's there waiting for him. And you're going to put him off by 6 months. So he searched around, tried to find some other places that would let him on. He did find another one that would take him on, but he'd have to prove he had 60 days of sobriety. 2 months off of marijuana, proven by piss test. Well, Tim didn't have that kind of time, and he died in 2 weeks. He could have had that liver transplant, but he died 2 weeks after it was denied because he was a legal medical marijuana patient. Now, that has changed. The state of Washington has passed law now that protects the rights of medical cannabis patients to not be kicked off transplant lists solely for their use of marijuana. Similar laws have passed in California, Illinois, Arizona, Delaware, and New Hampshire, as they should. There's currently a bill in the state of Maine that is being proposed, and the story in CNN discusses the case of Gary Godfrey. In 2010, he was removed from his Oregon transplant list because he's using medical marijuana. Now, the opponents of this, which are usually the hospitals or the transplant programs, want to cite safety. Now, it's well known that when you're talking about organ transplants, like, for example, they're not going to give a new liver to somebody who's an active alcoholic. It's like, why are we going to put a new liver in a guy who's just going to drink it to death too, right? So there is a morality here that we have to take into consideration. And that's what they try to do. They try to play this moral card in kicking the medical cannabis patients off because of a supposed risk that the medical marijuana use is going to cause for the transplant. And according to the Maine transplant program, they put out a press statement that said that transplant candidates already have compromised immune systems. So if they're using marijuana, that can increase their risk of a deadly fungal infection known as aspergillosis. Aspergillosis. Aspergillosis, one or the other. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. Now, it is possible to get this aspergillosis fungal infection from smoking cannabis. It is possible. But it's such a low risk and so rare that this happens that it is far less than the risk of dying because you don't have a liver. This is really stretching to deny people something that saves their lives. Denying this life-saving procedure because of this rare, tiny little risk is absurd. Dr. David Klassen at the United Network for Organ Sharing, he's the chief medical officer, says, quote, "The thing that comes up with marijuana is the risk of pulmonary infections, especially fungal infections with aspergillosis. Such infections can be absolutely devastating complications, but, you know, how often does that really happen? How likely is it? Those questions are less well understood. It's a question of how much risk does that really impose versus the benefit that the patient potentially gets from getting the transplant, end quote. Yeah, no kidding. And here's the deal. There isn't any body of research that shows this is a huge problem. Shouldn't the situation be that we give people things that will save their life until we can prove doing so is harmful, rather than assuming doing something could be harmful and denying someone their life-saving procedure because of it? This is how crazy the morality, the moral disapproval of marijuana twists our ethics and twists our logic. You'd think with anything else, you'd have to prove that it was some big harmful risk before you deny someone a possible way to save their life. But not marijuana. It might, maybe could cause a problem, so we gotta deny you. So this is a problem that every state that has a transplant program needs to start looking at, and not just for the people that are medical consumers of cannabis. Any consumption of cannabis should not be a disqualifier for being on a medical transplant list. Even if you're in Idaho, even if it's completely illegal in your state, medical decisions shouldn't rest on the legality of people's actions. Medical decisions should rest on the medical reality of their decision. Whether or not marijuana is illegal shouldn't make a difference. It's not like the organ transplant is going to have a worse chance of success in Idaho than in California because Idaho says marijuana is illegal. Either marijuana is harmful to the organ transplant or it's not. Doesn't matter whether the state thinks it's legal. Doesn't matter whether the person using it's using it for medicine or just to get high. Either it harms an organ transplant or it does not. And what studies we do have, what research we do have on this issue, shows either no difference between the people who are marijuana users and people who are not marijuana users when it comes to the success of their organ transplants, short-term and long-term, or the result we get is they turn out slightly better, slightly less rejection of their organs, slightly less complications, fewer complications with their procedures. And then, of course, anecdotally, I would just point out my buddy Ganja John, living it up in Huntington Beach, California now. And he got himself out of Portland. And my goodness, the guy's had a kidney transplant and been through all sorts of medical hell. And he's still doing fine. This has got to be something that needs to be a reason. It needs to be eliminated as a reason to disqualify people for organ transplants. The CNN story goes on to parallel how HIV used to be a disqualifier for getting an organ transplant. And now we're finding HIV patients do well after organ transplants. We actually let that happen and found, hey, what do you know? It didn't turn out to be that big a deal. So with marijuana, we need to get this education in front of these organ transplant boards, in front of these doctors, in front of these hospitals, so that they understand there's not only a lack of risk here that justifies taking these people off the organ transplant list, but there's actually the potential for healing, the actual potential for this to turn out better because of the use of medical cannabis. So much of this, of course, is still based on it being a federal Schedule I drug, and so much of our medical infrastructure being tied up in that. So we understand why this is happening. It's no surprise. It's just recognizing where we want to take this and how cruel and unnecessary it is to allow people to die when there's a life-saving organ transplant waiting for them, and to deny that to them because they smoked a non-toxic herb. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we've got some interesting video from Reason.com. They talked to a bunch of marijuana entrepreneurs and asked them what they thought about the Trump administration and Jeff Sessions and whether or not that was bad news for the industry. We'll get their responses and my take on their responses when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
We have four times the incarceration rate on a percentage basis of any country in the world, and second place is New Zealand.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere.
This is Radical Russ Belville with a word about giving back. We're all very excited about the recent gains in marijuana reform, but while you may love the convenience of shopping for marijuana at a storefront, or are lucky enough to be profiting from the green rush, it's important that you remember that you wouldn't be where you are today without the sacrifices of cannabis freedom fighters who risked everything when zero states had marijuana legalization. Join, support, and donate to your local and national drug reform organizations, including the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, NORML, at normal.org, Students for Sensible Drug Policy at ssdp.org, Marijuana Policy Project at mpp.org, Americans for Safe Access at safeaccessnow.org, Drug Policy Alliance at drugpolicy.org, and Law Enforcement Action Partnership at leap.cc. This has been a public service announcement from the Russ Belville Show.
Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you here. Token Talk Radio, 37 and a half after the hour. I'm going to take a little time here and take a look at a piece in Forbes.com. Or no, this is Reason.com. Excuse me. Got to get my source right. That at Reason.com, it's entitled "The Future of Legal Pot Under Trump, Marijuana Entrepreneurs Speak Out." And it features discussions with some of these marijuana industry folks on what they think of Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions and their recent pronouncements regarding marijuana policy. I thought it might be fun for us to give a listen to and maybe get some of my comments in response.
November 8th, 2016 was a good night for Donald Trump.
I love this country. Thank you. Thank you very much.
But it was also a great night for marijuana. California, Nevada, Massachusetts, and Maine all approved legalization of recreational cannabis. And Florida, North Dakota, and Arkansas legalized medical marijuana. All told, more than half the states in America have legalized the drug in one form or another. So how will the Trump administration deal with pot, which, after all, is still illegal under federal law? On the campaign trail, Trump seemed friendly to the notions of medical marijuana and leaving the rest to the states.
I think medical should happen, right? Don't we agree? I mean, I think so. And then I really believe you should leave it up to the states. It should be a state situation.
But signals from his administration have been more mixed.
There is still a federal law that we need to abide by in terms of
the medical, when it comes to recreational marijuana.
I, as you know, am dubious about marijuana.
We asked cannabis industry professionals what they see for the future of legal weed in the Trump era.
I see the future of the marijuana industry under the Trump administration as, in the short term, a little cloudy. But when I say cloudy, it doesn't mean the skies are dark. It just means it's unclear.
I can never figure out whether it's art of the deal or not. You know, how much of it's rhetoric and how much of it is going to actually come to pass.
I want a little more clarity before I'm able to really give my opinion.
Trump's Attorney General Jeff Sessions is a longtime drug warrior, but even he seems reluctant to commit to a full-on crackdown.
As states, I get, can pass whatever laws they choose, but I'm not sure we're going to be a better, healthier nation that if we have marijuana being sold at every corner grocery store.
Attorney General Sessions doesn't have to worry because that's not how the industry works. It takes a long time to get either a municipal or county permit, and they're highly regulated stores that track seed to sale.
There's code. You don't open up near a school. The people going into these dispensaries to purchase such product have to be of age.
I think the sitting attorney general is an older gentleman who grew up in a certain context, and we're all victims of our own context and history. So I understand his position and why he has those deep-seated feelings.
You know, marijuana is a cure for opiate abuse. Give me a break. I mean, you know, this is the kind of argument that has been made out there, to just almost a desperate attempt to defend the harmlessness of marijuana or even its benefits. I doubt that's true.
Much of modern science contradicts Sessions' dim view of marijuana's therapeutic potential, with the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine finding conclusive evidence that cannabis is an effective treatment for chronic pain after surveying 10,000 scientific studies on the matter. Nonetheless, the federal government continues to keep marijuana in its most highly controlled category, Schedule 1, and recognizes no currently accepted medical use, citing high potential for abuse. With Sessions helming the Department of Justice, this classification seems unlikely to change anytime soon, meaning the tension between state and federal law will remain.
When you look at it being on Schedule 1, it's a bit absurd because the definition of Schedule 1 is highly addictive and no medical uses. And cannabis couldn't be further from the truth on both those criteria. So at the end of the day, the truth is marching forward.
While crackdowns on medical cannabis seem unlikely given Trump's public statements and overwhelming public support for medicinal use, what about recreational marijuana? After all, that's a distinction Trump's press secretary, Sean Spicer, was careful to make in his comments.
The states where it's allowed, in accordance with the appropriations rider, have set forth a process to administer and regulate that usage versus recreational marijuana. That's a very, very different subject.
With the largest state in the union legalizing recreational weed, the feds would need to devote major resources to crack down. And that seems like a fight most Americans aren't up for either, with 71% of Quinnipiac poll respondents opposed to the federal government enforcing laws against marijuana in states that have legalized medical or recreational use. This disapproval of federal encroachment on state laws is pretty consistent across partisan lines.
I've always been a believer in federalism and states' rights. I think that it's up to societies and communities to dictate for themselves what rules they choose to govern themselves by. Hopefully, moving forward, the administration will have an open mind about it and be ready to listen to see how beneficial this has been in the areas where it's been tried.
If I were in an elevator and had an opportunity to speak to Donald Trump directly, I'd probably invite him for a drink or ask him to sit down over a meal, break some bread, and give me the opportunity to educate him about the true data of the cannabis industry. It's a job creator. I'm not saying I'm in favor of building a wall, but if you want to build a wall, there's potentially a couple billion dollars worth of excise tax revenue.
I don't see anyone pumping the brakes on this big industry. I see it expanding and doing better and helping more people.
That's a piece out at reason.com where they're speaking to various folks in the marijuana industry, getting their take on whether or not marijuana as an industry is going to thrive or how it will be affected by the new administration and their disapproval of marijuana. I tend to take a dimmer view than they do. I think that we are likely to face some sort of pushback from this administration, some sort of injunction or letter or threat. But really, I think it's just a question of how much can they slow us down, right? We're like LeBron James now. You can't shut us down. You can only hope to control us. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to get our buckets. We're going to continue to get our victories. We're going to get our decrim wins in cities. We're going to get more states that pass medical marijuana. Oklahoma's got it on the ballot in 2018. West Virginia, South Dakota, Idaho, all these states that are lacking any laws are beginning to look like they're going to pass one sometime soon. So we're going to continue to get victories. That's not in question. I really don't think we're at a point where they can take it all away. No, we're way past that for sure. But can they slow the progress? Can they slow our roll a little bit? Yes, I think they can. And the direction in which cannabis laws continue to unfold could be shaped, I think, at this point. I'm really pleased by the news out of West Virginia. This West Virginia bill being passed by their legislature would be the most lenient medical marijuana law in the East. It would allow patients, any patient, to cultivate, I think it was two plants, was it? Yeah, maybe it was two plants or something like that. Two plants and four immature plants. No halos, no restrictions on you can't smoke it. You could actually grow your own cannabis plants and harvest your own marijuana from them if this West Virginia bill passes. And it contains all the standard procedures that you'd get, conditions, I should say, that you'd have in a medical marijuana law. Cancer, AIDS, seizures, spasms, nausea, cachexia. Strikingly, it doesn't contain glaucoma. That's kind of interesting. It doesn't contain glaucoma in its list, but it does contain anxiety. Now, that's for a legislative passed medical marijuana law to have anxiety in it is remarkable. But it also has PTSD and hospice care. Anything that puts you in hospice, you qualify for medical cannabis. And you qualify if you're taking any treatment or have any condition that creates pain, nausea, seizures, spasm, cancer, AIDS, and cachexia. So that could cover a broad range of conditions. This would be the broadest medical marijuana law in the Eastern time zone if it should pass. And that warms my heart. This would be the first strike against the Box Canyon theory since 2006, since Rhode Island passed the last legislatively passed medical marijuana law that allowed all patients to cultivate cannabis. Ever since then, every legislature that's ever passed it, at best, has allowed there to be home cultivation only outside of a halo or with a hardship exemption or something like that. And at worst, have passed these laws that don't allow any smoking at all, don't allow any marijuana at all. You got to get a pill, a spray, a lotion, tincture, any of that kind of crap. So if West Virginia can pass this thing, that provides a whole lot of ammo to advocates in other states, conservative states, to go, hey, look, I mean, West Virginia passed home grow, for God's sake. What are we worried about? If we could get that, that would be pretty remarkable. Now, I'm checking out the live chat room here at YouTube, and Cajun Aggie is pointing out that Louisiana removed glaucoma from the list of approved conditions in our most recent medical marijuana bill. Yeah, I'm afraid, folks, glaucoma is at risk as a qualifying condition because a lot of recent studies have been showing that cannabis really isn't that an effective a medicine compared to some of the other medicines they have now for relieving the intraocular pressure of glaucoma. Yeah, it does work. You can smoke pot to reduce the pressure. It's just you have to always be smoking pot to keep that pressure down. As compared to some of these eye drops they've got now that, you know, they'll work 12, 24 hours, something like that. So, again, it's one of those deals where Louisiana, like a lot of states, is looking at cannabis as the medicine of last resort. Maybe you don't want to take eye drops. Maybe you don't like the eye drops. Maybe you prefer an herbal remedy for your glaucoma that also comes with the benefit of some euphoria. Nope. Sorry. Medicine of last resort thinking. You can only have marijuana if absolutely nothing else will work, and only if marijuana works better than everything else. Otherwise, you're stuck with the eye drops. Yep, afraid that's the way it's going, folks. Got my friend LV Musica in Oregon. She's one of the two remaining federal patients. She uses medical cannabis for glaucoma. So the federal government still gives a woman 8 ounces of weed a month for glaucoma. But the states are taking it out of their medical marijuana laws. It's a wacky world, isn't it? We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll close up shop for the week. It's been a fun week, and next week we got all sorts of surprises for you. Stay tuned. Maybe I'll give you some hints when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
No Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs. Lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs. We've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Americans have increasingly come to the conclusion that the drug war is a failed policy.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 52 and a half after the hour, and we're winding things up for the first quarter of the year. Can you believe we're a fourth of the way through 2017? Wow. Unbelievable. Spring has sprung, and April is upon us. Starting tomorrow, it's April Fool's Day. The one day of the year when people take a critical look at the stories presented to them on the internet before they forward them. The only day. So tomorrow's April Fool's Day. I'm trying to think about what my April Fool's post will be on weednews.co. I think I know what it's going to be. I'll keep it a surprise for now, but every April Fool's Day, I like to write some sort of April Fool's post. One year, I wrote a post back in the George W. Bush days that George W. Bush announced that marijuana was legal, and I got a lot of hate mail for that one. People were pissed because they believed it. I wrote it really subtle, too, so it seemed like it was, you know, a real press release. So some people didn't get the satire and hated it, so... Check out weednews.co tomorrow. I'll have something up on my April Fool's post. My Radical Rant post is up on hightimes.com right now, and you heard that in the rant today. I got a comment from someone on Twitter who liked my comment about Attorney General and Sling Blade Hobbit Jeff Sessions. Sling Blade Hobbit. I came up with that one today. I was going to go with... Forrest Gump crossed with a Keebler elf. And then I thought, you know, I think someone's used that one already. Let me go with Sling Blade Hobbit. So there we go. Because people are saying that marijuana is a cure for the opiate crisis. Give me a break. Have you heard this? So I guess that fits. That'll work. Sling Blade Hobbit is good. But April's going to be a pretty busy month, and I've been hinting all this time that something big is coming in May. And I'll give you a little more hintage. Starting May 1st, you're going to hear a lot more from other organizations and groups. Let's put it that way. You know how we've had a regular segment with Law Enforcement Action Partnership and a regular segment with Dr. Mitch? Multiply that times like 30. No, times 15. 2 times 15. We're going to have about 30 different regular segments that are going to start debuting in May. Serious. I've been pre-recording some of these for the past couple of weeks so that we are going to have more coverage of a greater breadth of the marijuana movement than ever before. So look forward to that starting in May. That's as much as I can tell you right now, is that we're going to have far, far more revolving regular segments with some of the top leaders in marijuana advocacy, medical marijuana, marijuana research, marijuana industry, marijuana culture. I've said too much. That's all I can tell you. That's all I can tell you right now, but it's coming up, and we'll give you more details starting next month. Starting on Monday's show on the 3rd, we'll give you even more details. Now, speaking of April, quick updates on the travel schedule. Be traveling all over the country this, I'll be in 3 different time zones this month, so get a chance to check me out. Actually, wait a minute. Mountain? Eastern? Pacific and Central. By God, I will be in all 4 continental U.S. time zones within the next 5 weeks. So there you go. This weekend, I get to stay here, so that's nice. But next weekend, I will be in Phoenix, Arizona. I will be taping a television program for New Frontier Data called Cannabis Insight. So I'll be the anchor of that show. Look forward to that. Following weekend of the 15th, I'll be in the Mountain Time Zone in Boise, Idaho at the Boise Hemp Fest. We're going to see if we can get the Idaho Drug Czar to show up and arrest me for being high in public. We'll see if that happens. Then the following week is 420 week. On 420, I'll be in Atlanta, Georgia for Project Sam and Kevin Sabet's Take Back 420 event. I'm going to take it back from them taking it back. And there's a DPA event that weekend. Then the following weekend, last weekend of April, I'll be in Eugene, Oregon at the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference and cross my fingers, hopefully interviewing Henry Rollins for the show. That'll be fun. And finally, first weekend of May, we'll be in Dallas, Texas for the Global Cannabis March. So there's the Central Time Zone. 4 time zones over the next 5 weeks. So we'll get a chance to report from all over this great country. You can follow me and the events that I'll be at through the Google Calendar. If you'd like a link to that Google Calendar to know where I'll be, if you'd like to meet up with me, send me an email, radicalrus@gmail.com. We're also working on the Radical Russ website. We'll have that up with the calendar embeds and subscription links and all that good stuff just as soon as we can. What else we'll be doing in April. All right, that music means it is time to go. Time flies when you legalize. That's it for this week, but we'll be back next week with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seat, you're planning to.
you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down to
well, hello there. It's been a long, long time. Well, how am I doing? Oh, I guess I'm doing fine. Well, it's been so long now, and it seems like it was only yesterday. Mind it funny how time slips away. Java's always got a group playing sometimes on the weekends, all the time on the weekends. So we want y'all to come on down and listen to some other groups. In the case of the Knights, we're going to be playing at the Eagles starting the 29th. Right here in Caldwell, and I guess there's a small cover charge to get in. But it ain't much. And let's face it, by God, we're worth it. Good night, God bless. Well, I gotta go now. I guess I'll see you hanging around. Out on the window. I never know when I'll be back in town. You're gonna pay.